Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 29th of September. Young adults are the recession's lost generation. In record numbers, they are struggling to find work, shunning long-distance moves to live with mom and dad, delaying marriage, raising kids out of wedlock if they are becoming parents. The unemployment rate for them is the highest since World War II, and they risk living in poverty more than others. Marriages fell to a record low last year, 51.4% among adults 18 and over, compared with 57% in 2000. 31% of young black men lived with their parents, 21% of young Latino men, and 15% of young white men. Younger women across all race and ethnic groups had fewer children compared with 2008. The number of Hispanic children in poverty rose by 500,000 to 6.1 million last year. Our guest this hour takes a look at this lost generation. He is Professor Richard Freeman, economics professor at Harvard University, faculty co-director of the Labor and Work-Life Program at the Harvard Law School, director of the National Bureau of Economic Research, senior research fellow in labor markets at the London School of Economics Center for Economic Performance. Recent publications include Reforming the Welfare State, Recovery and Beyond in Sweden, Shared Capitalism at Work, Employee Ownership, Profit and Gain Sharing, Broad-Based Stock Options, and he's written many other books as well. We're going to be talking about the lost generation, and I'm sure that you will have stories to tell us that will add to our discussion what you are living in, what your children are living in, if you're in this age group and you're finding yourself at wit's end because it's darned hard to find a job, or you have a job that leaves you really underemployed. Our guest says young people will be scarred and they will be called the lost generation in that their careers would not be the same way if we had avoided this economic disaster. Professor Richard Freeman, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, glad to be with you.
Yeah, our phone line is, can you just tell me your name? Our phone line is not great.
Richard Freeman, glad to be with you.
There you go. There you go. It's a little bit better. We read this report, and we know that it's kind of around us, but to hear these numbers is really disheartening, isn't it?
This is the most depressing economy we have had since the Great Depression. And it's particularly awful for young people. And if people talk with their grandparents or great-grandparents and hear stories of the Depression, they will get a better sense of how it is going to be for a long period of time of just struggling to make ends meet.
So if you are preparing yourself, and many young people have prepared themselves for careers, many of them are obviously finding that those careers are not open to them.
Yeah, people will be bumped down, and they'll take maybe 3 or 4 more years before they get on their intended career track. And those 3 or 4 years, they should learn whatever they can about other activities, but they're going to sort of never recover where they would have been.
Yeah. We're going to call you back. The phone line is just not acceptable, and we want to hear all of your words, so we will call you right back. Richard Freeman, economics professor at Harvard University, is our guest. Our phone number, if you want to join this conversation to talk about this, how the recession has been hitting young people in this country very hard, our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Our number two of our program, a book that came to our attention from Nancy Pearl, actually, a little while ago, who loved it, and I read it yesterday. It is a marvelous book, Destiny of the Republic, A Tale of Madness, Medicine, and the Murder of the President James Garfield. It looks at key figures, the doctor who didn't really know what he was doing when it came to germs because he didn't believe in germs, who poked around inside the bullet wound and he died of infection. Alexander Graham Bell, who did whatever he could to try and save the president, and a host of other characters, to say nothing of a really fascinating president, James Garfield. So that's coming up. Okay, Richard Freeman, there. Hello.
Hello.
There we go.
Clearer to you.
Yeah, it's much better. Thank you. We just wanted to hear what you were saying. So you were saying something, and I couldn't hear it clearly, about 3 to 4 years?
Yeah, well, what will happen will be people will be off their career tracks for a certain period of time, and it'll be 3 to 4 years before they begin to get into their careers. And those 3 to 4 years will basically be years in which they will have lost the opportunity to build up skills in their careers. And what has happened is that people just never catch up to where they would have been had they started off immediately.
And are we looking at certain kinds of careers or all careers? Are there certain careers that are wide open?
The only career that's wide open is, it used to be wide open at least, is investment bankers.
Right.
But if you've noticed the news lately, Goldman Sachs is beginning to lose a little money, and they're going to be contracting now.
So what are young people doing? Are they taking part-time jobs in totally unrelated fields, waitressing, cleaning hotel rooms?
You know, people are doing almost anything they can to get a job. Some people are getting no-wage internships. But, of course, then you better be living at home, and you better be having parents who can afford to take care of your financial needs.
And you write that the high levels of underemployment and unemployment will haunt young people for at least another decade.
Yeah, it's very hard to see what's going to get us out of this jobless period. Say you're a U.S. company, and you're thinking of investing in the U.S., but you're going to be able to hire cheaper workers in China or India. So where are you going to put your plant? For your activity. I think we've got a very long haul of tough times for people.
Should we be doing something special to make sure we don't lose this generation?
Absolutely. I mean, the one thing you'd say would really help is if people could get more schooling, more skills, then that will partially balance out the loss of a direct work experience. That's what some of the European countries did when they had a long period of unemployment in the 1980s, 1990s. But we have a problem that most people go to state universities, and the states are contracting because of the low tax receipts.
Right. And when you talk about what Europeans did, what kinds of schooling are you discussing here? What did people study?
In Spain, they did a massive increase of university education. People studied the same sorts of things they study in all advanced countries. There are a lot of business course things, some science things, some engineering, and a whole generation of Spanish young people. At that point, the unemployment rate in Spain was 25%.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was way above ours. But they are much more used to living at home and, for extended periods. That was part of the culture in Spain, I would say. And so people got better educated. So Spain has a much better educated group of young people than they ever would have had, which helped them later on when the economy picked up in advancing.
And what about older people, Professor Freeman? Are there too many people, say, in my generation who are staying in the workplace too long?
Well, if they don't, they're going to have trouble paying for their retirement.
Right.
So you don't want to turn this into a generation fight of which generation should have jobs. That was another one of the, I thought, terrible mistakes the Europeans made. This was an error. They basically early retired lots of people in order to create jobs, quote, for young people. But it turns out young people and older people work together in workplaces. Well, the older people pass on some of their experience and so on. There isn't that much substitution between the two age groups. So you're not helping the situation if you're forcing older people out of work.
There are other ramifications of this lost generation. I was talking about the number of marriages being way down. Of course, the number of people who are living at home with mom and dad, which may create financial problems for mom and dad. Talk more about the other ramifications.
Well, I think the biggest one is that people are having a very different vision of our country. This had always been a country where people said things are going to get better. Our children will be better off than us. Young people could always think that they're going to be wealthier and have more schooling than their parents. And that just means a country that doesn't see itself. If we don't have that view anymore, we're not going to be seeing ourselves as advancing rapidly. And I think once you get pessimistic about the country's prospects, well, we see it in the business community not investing in the country.
The lost generation was coined some time ago. Have we been through a number of lost generations in the last century, say, and there we figured out some way at some time how to get out of it?
I think the only comparable case to what we have now is indeed the Great Depression.
Really? Oh, my.
All the other ups and downs we've had have been sort of brief cycles. There were college graduates who graduated in the last big recession we had, which was the early 1980s, and that ended. That was during President Reagan period, and they were trying to wipe out the inflation that came from the oil price increases. But that was a controlled recession, and so once the inflation went down, we took some policy changes, and bang, the economy came back quickly. The last time we had an economy where it's just very hard to get us moving was the Great Depression.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Professor Freeman. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. We're going to try and fix some of our sound problems, too. We can hear him, but I know it's not as clear as he should be. We're looking at the lost generation, young adults being the recession's lost generation, many of them in record numbers struggling to find work. They are not usually, many young people go from where they've gone to college and where they've grown up to different parts of the country. They are not doing that now. They are delaying marriage, raising children out of wedlock if they are becoming parents. Unemployment rate for them the highest since World War II, and they do risk living in poverty. So what do we do about that? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org, and we'll take your phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls. Let's start with Linda in Monroe. Hi, Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hello. Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
Good program. Hello, Professor Freeman. I read yesterday online, it said the new Forbes 400 list just came out, and it said back in 1982 that an American of means needed at least $75 million to enter the ranks of the Forbes 400. Now it said the threshold this year for the current 2011 list was $1.05 billion. Now, with all the money that's pyramiding up to the top, that doesn't leave much for the rest of us. And they say we need the rich people to create jobs. And I think that, I'm wondering if that's why the group Occupy Wall Street is picketing Wall Street. But why aren't they creating jobs? And where are the jobs that they're creating in this country, the wealthy?
That's a good question. Because it's not so much the money that the wealthy top 400 or whatever people have. Companies, American companies, are filled with profits. And instead of investing in the U.S., they are buying back their shares, which pushes the wealth of the wealthiest who own lots of shares up more. Or they are investing overseas. And I think one of the real problems is if you are a wealthy American or a wealthy corporation with lots of money and you look and you say, I can get some of this work done in another country or I can get it done in the U.S. and the U.S. workers are paid more. And, oh, by the way, the infrastructure in a place like China, they have new super railroads taking people quickly between places. They are going to have the biggest airport in the world shortly in Beijing. You're sort of saying, well, maybe I put my money, my new investments into outside this country.
And we have been debating for some time whether or not we need a federal stimulus package that would create jobs. Mostly that's been directed toward infrastructure. There hasn't been much talk, if any, that I can recall, about stimulating jobs for people who are getting out of college.
No, the hope is that they will just sort of find their way after a few years of lost time. You may remember that Mayor Bloomberg said, Mayor Bloomberg of New York, that what frightened him the most was if the college people in the country, the young college people, got really angered by the situation. That is the backbone of protests. So the people whom the listener mentioned were in the Wall Street area. Those are young people. Those are not 50-year-olds, 40-year-olds. And that could be a mistake in the country, because to have a militant, angered group of young, particularly college graduates, who have gone to school, done all the right things, come out with skills, and then suddenly find they cannot get a job, that could create some real social problems.
Do you see signs of that? You talked about Wall Street. Do you see signs of that now? Why hasn't it happened yet?
No, I don't see signs of that in this country. But if you go, you sort of say America's going to be like the rest of the world. We're not totally off the map of other countries. And we're now suddenly facing some of the problems other countries have. As you may know, the young people in Madrid, Spain, went on a huge protest. We had the outburst of violence, not by university-type people, in Britain. That shocked everybody, young people who could see no future for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we, of course, have a history of protests. Hopefully they will not be violent, or the British one was. The Spanish was not violent. We just had a protest, just interesting, in Chile. They had a kiss-in.
A kiss-in?
Yes. In Chile, the students protesting that the president, who is a very wealthy man, and was doing some changes in the university system that the students were against. And so they did a very interesting kiss-in, and so the police couldn't come and rough them up. So maybe the next thing should be a big, giant hug and kiss-in in front of Wall Street.
Maybe it should. Thank you very much for your call, Linda. Let's go to Kelly in Milwaukee. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, good morning. I am an Iraq War veteran, and I am in school right now on the GI Bill. I have an associate's in ethnic studies, and I'm working towards a bachelor in political science with a minor in public relations. And my question is, with the job market being what it is, am I better suited to remain in school through a master's degree in political science or public relations, or should I finish out the next 2 years, have my bachelor's, and then try and enter the workforce?
What I would do would be when you finish the bachelor's, or right before you finish it, start looking around for jobs. And I would look widely, because with what you just said as your skills, maybe companies with international experience would want you. You should be prepared to go overseas if a company says that's the best place, for you. But then if I had trouble in the job market getting a job, I then would go for the master's. But if you had a choice between adding one or two more years to get your master's, or you had a job at hand, I would take the job at hand.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Kelly, very much for your call. Jeannie in Sun Prairie. Hi, Jeannie.
Oh, good morning. Really good topic. I'm happy to say I have two kids that have jobs, and I tell them all the time to be thankful for it. And I've also given my son the advice to stay in school and get your master's. You know what concerns me, though, is we don't hear enough about the business aspect of it, and I think some allegiance to this country. I've been watching businesses exodus for, you know, 15 years with a lot of interest and, you know, in anticipation of the eventual effect on our country, and now we're seeing it come to fruition, and it really concerns me. And the other thing that concerns me is the illegal immigrants, because they are working, and you never hear anything about businesses who are hiring them, and they know it's illegal, but they do it anyway. I really think if we got, you know, if we got a handle on the immigration policies and the illegals, and I mean, I know it's a complex issue, but I feel like they are taking jobs away. The other thing I want to comment on is getting some of these companies to bring their call centers and stuff back to America. So with that, I just thought I'd throw that stuff out there for some comments.
Thanks, Jeannie. Thanks for your call. Professor Freeman.
Yeah, with the, I think first is the hot topic, the illegal immigrants. And if you're illegal, you are likely doing very unskilled work. It's tough to be an illegal immigrant and, you know, have a really good job in the country. So I don't think they take that many jobs away from Americans. But obviously, every job lost is a job lost. And it is true that some companies will tell you that they could not find any Americans. Say you're talking about people picking, I don't know, apples in upstate New York. I don't know if you have apples in...
We have apples, yes.
Yeah. So it's awfully hard to get, you know, Americans. And in some sense, we don't want it to be that we are so poor that Americans are going out and, you know, making that their career. So I have a little more gentle view of the immigrants, legal or illegal. Obviously, they should be legal. We want legal people. I forgot what the second part of her question was.
I did too, actually. I was worried about the sound. We'll remember. It will come to our minds. thanks, Jeannie, very much for... Oh, she talked about... people bring some of these jobs back to the United States. Why do we have call centers abroad instead of here?
No, there has been a little bit of that, actually. Call centers came back here because, A, you do get better service if you have a call center in the U.S. And there's been some efforts, even one of the Indian firms that traditionally does call centers overseas, they are trying to do some of the call center things in rural America. But there's this huge cost difference. Well, I think one of the problems the country has is, okay, we had a financial disaster. We had let's say, inadequate response to that disaster. And at the same point, we are going through this major adjustment that there are billions of people in the world who now can compete with us, who are paid much lower wages.
Right.
And probably the best thing would be if they get their wages up as fast as can be, and we should applaud that whenever it happens.
Is it happening anywhere? Is that happening in China? Or
China, the wages have been rising by, I'd say, 15% in the last few years. China recovered from this recession. And the Chinese, the minimum wages in China have just been zooming up. The government is just pushing hard. And what is also fascinating is the Chinese government is encouraging trade unions. Even though there's a danger, you know, unions will turn against the totalitarian state. And because they see that as one of the only tools they have to basically shift some of the income to workers, and that benefits American workers indirectly.
It's hard to imagine you think something has to take place to change things, because you're not going to have a better economy with more jobs unless you have somebody starting a job so that the young people can get the jobs and pay money so that for things and to keep the economy going. It's kind of this vicious circle, isn't it?
No, I think it is a vicious circle. And I don't think it's possible for us to seriously reduce the fiscal deficit until we deal with the unemployment. And so you're kind of in this stuck. And Japan had some of that in their lost decade. They did not have the levels of unemployment we are having. But they did have a lost generation of young people who were where the unemployment was focused. And you did see them, the young people, behaving, you know, losing some of the attributes you normally associate with hardworking Japanese. And I fear we will see some of that in the U.S. as well. Why should I work hard if I can't see where it's going to pay off for me?
Mm-hmm. Tim in Wadsworth, Illinois. Hi, Tim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have to say, first off, my wife and I are very lucky. We went to college. We have bachelor's degrees. Now, to say that we're in our field, it would be not true. But we had to find jobs that were going to pay back our student loans. And that's a big problem now with not only my wife and myself, but our friends as well as family members. You know, finding the job that's going to pay the bills as well as, you know, your student loan. You know, there's a Facebook feed that's going around. I guess Susie Orman is trying to stimulate the economy by wiping the debt of all the student loans. And that money that's spent on paying back your loans would be thrown back into the economy, whereas, you know, you go shopping, buy a car, you know, get married, buy a house. And that money will then, you know, stimulate the economy. And I don't understand why the government, you know, we're bailing out everybody else, but how about the people that went to school to better themselves and now are having trouble or hard times, one, paying back their loans or finding a job within their field? I feel that, you know, we keep constantly helping everybody else, but, you know, no one's helping us.
Mm-hmm. Where did you find work, you and your wife, Tim? What area?
Well, we both have culinary degrees. We're both bachelors of culinary management. My wife is now working in medical billing, and I'm actually working in field sales for a chemical company.
Quite different than what you studied for.
Extremely different. But, you know, I had to find a job that was going to pay the bills. And, you know, I wanted to get married, and I wasn't going to be able to get married working at, you know, a fast food joint.
Right. Professor Freeman.
Well, this touches upon it. One aspect of the way U.S. funds higher education, which is not fully rational, there is a solution to this problem, which the Australians have adopted, and it should be widely adopted around the world. You basically have people go free to university, but if you go, you pay a slightly higher tax rate later on. So if I was in the 25% bracket, maybe I'd be paying 27%. So I'm paying in the future for the education today rather than taking the loans and paying immediately when I graduate and faced with the problem. And that would be a very simple kind of answer. Now, to change the way we do this, you know, requires... No, you have to convince so many people in Congress and so on. But it's worked very well in Australia, because then, you know, you say, well, maybe you don't have to pay the extra percent until your income exceeds some level. So you've gotten the return to college.
What about his point, Professor Freeman, that we bailed out the fat cats on Wall Street? Maybe we needed to, or the whole economy would have collapsed. We haven't received very much in return. They got bonuses, but the rest of us are really struggling.
No, it turns out they are an ungrateful group of people. They got their bonuses, they got recovered, and then they said the hell with the rest of the country, as far as I can see. We may have been forced to bail them out because the whole financial system would have collapsed. But there were certainly a sizable fraction of conservative Republicans who voted against that bailout. They weren't buying that story. Right? Well, obviously, we have no experiment. We don't know what would have happened had we not bailed them out. But it's clear we didn't strike the proper terms for the bailout. Because if you're one of these banks and you now have got huge sums of money, and the reason you have huge sums of money is that the American taxpayer saved you, and it is true they paid back some of their loans to the government, but still they would not be there except for that the taxpayer bailed them out. I think we just got a little bit taken by the banks and the way that many people get taken by the banks.
Thanks, Tim, for your call. Good to hear from somebody who's living what we're talking about. Shayna, I mean, I'm sorry you're living it, but it brings it to our attention. Shayna in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on my sort of role as a college professor. And I'm actually seeing not anger in my students who have recently graduated or who are in school now. I'm actually seeing not so much anger, but like a sort of complacency even, and almost like this blind belief in the American dream. You know, we've all been taught by our parents that if we just work hard in America, you know, we'll never lose our job and things will go, you know, so well for us and we'll be prosperous. And I see my students, you know, not that optimism isn't helpful, but I'm actually seeing my students sort of not planning for the real factors and situations that they're going to have to deal with, or they're already dealing with. Now they don't have a plan. They have a sort of, you know, I have the American dream and if I'm going to work hard and I wish that there was actually a little bit less blind optimism, happening in this sort of Generation Y. I think they need to deal with a different reality, even than I did as a Gen Xer. So I just wanted to hear your comments on that.
Yeah, that's interesting. You certainly don't want them to be depressed and give up, which is what I think would be the worst situation. But there is this kind of sense of if there's only 10 jobs there and there are 12 of us, 10 of us are going to get the jobs. And the whole American story would be, oh, the two guys who don't get it, they're not as good as 10 of us who got it, et cetera. So I can imagine your students just saying, well, I will get that job and other people won't. And we've certainly seen some of that attitude in some of the national polls and things where people are not worrying as much as perhaps they should about their neighbors. And it's hard, I think, for people to understand that, yeah, I'll get the job, but until we resolve the problem for all the people, we're not going to have a growing economy with rising prosperity for the bulk of us. I'll get the job, but my wage will be lower than it otherwise would be. I will be struggling. I'm better off than you who didn't get the job. And that's also part of what has become, I think, a large part of the American ethos. It's incredible. I take care of myself. I compete with you. And rather than looking at the country as a whole.
Until I get in a situation where I need your help.
Yes. Well said.
Thanks, Shayna, very much for the call. John in Eagle River. Hi.
Good morning. I don't know if your guest is as old as I. I'm about to be 69, but back in 1972, 3, and 4, that's when it began. I think under Nixon, but expanded under Ford and really expanded under Carter, there was a project called the Public Service Employment Program. And the money under new federalism went to county governments that would basically create jobs. Our commissioners were thinking forward enough to realize that creating jobs in the private nonprofit sector would be much better than creating public jobs. So 80% of our money went to that, but our funds grew from $250,000 one year to $29 million under Carter per year. And we created thousands of jobs, and most of in the private non-sector, not-for-profit, And those programs have grown just immensely and employed more and more people. And I wonder why this was a Republican idea back then, and it solved, I think it dropped the unemployment rate by 2 or 3% within a year. And that's one comment I'd like your guest's comment on. The other is people are worried about us funding schooling for undocumented children of undocumented workers. In reality, if we funded education in Mexico, and it only costs $50 a month to send someone to preparatoria, or which is high school, and there is no money in Mexico to do that, if we did that, we would cut our undocumented worker force coming across the border by probably 2/3. Anyway, I'd like his comments on
Thanks,
both
John.
Of those.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, well, on providing either nonprofit, I would say, or public sector jobs. Right now, the biggest problem in this, one of the biggest problems in this economy, is that the public sector is contracting. And that means more people without jobs and without reasonably good jobs, public sector reasonably good job area. Whether we could do something with the nonprofits, perhaps, or do something to staunch the bleeding of the public sector, which, you know, you've seen the private sector's created a small number of jobs every month or so, and the public sector has been reducing because they're under this real, a real hard budget constraint. They have to do this. You know, we know in some states they've taken wage, public sector, including Wisconsin, public sector workers taking wage cuts, which does save jobs given a budget constraint. But obviously it's not going to increase their spending. That'll create private sector jobs for people as they spend money. So I think one of the successes of the original Obama stimulus was indeed money to states and localities. I don't know how much reached down to the county level. That stopped this bleeding. We are the only country in the advanced world where one part of the government tries a stimulus, but the other part of the government, which hires, meaning the state and local and counties, which hire many more people than the federal government, when we have a recession, they start contracting. So as long as that's going on, and with no more federal stimuli or money going to the states and localities, we're just going to see a continual bleeding in that sector until the tax revenues begin going up and they can hire people again. I doubt that funding Mexican schools, or maybe a positive thing, and you know, virtuous, it would greatly affect the flow of illegal immigrants or migrants into the country. The wage differences, the income differences between Mexico and the U.S. are so great. It will take many, you know, many, many years before people in Mexico don't say, I'd rather live in the U.S. if I can just get in the U.S. My kids have a better life.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, John, for the call. We're going to welcome more phone calls in a moment. Richard Freeman is our guest, economics professor at Harvard University, faculty co-director of the Labor and Work-Life Program at the Harvard Law School, director of the National Bureau of Economic Research, senior research fellow in labor markets at the London School of Economics Center for Economic Performance, and author of a number of publications concerning the economy in this country and throughout the world. We're talking about the lost generation this hour as a result of new census data that was released last week. There are more signs that young people in America are a lost generation. Only 55% of Americans ages 16 to 29 have jobs. The number of Americans between the ages of 25 and 34 living with their parents increased by 25%. During the recession. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour number two of our program, Destiny of the Republic, Candace Millard, who wrote the great book on Roosevelt, The River of Doubt. This is a tale of madness, medicine, and the murder of a president, James Garfield, an extraordinarily interesting man. It weaves together his story, the doctor who bungled trying to save him because he didn't believe in germs, Alexander Graham Bell, who tried to find the bullet that was in Garfield's body, what was going on post-Civil War, Reconstruction, and who he was as a man. He's an extraordinary person, so a forgotten president. He wasn't in office very long. That's probably why he was forgotten, but it's a remarkable story, very well told by Candace. So she's with us, hour number two. We go back to phone calls, 800-486-8655. Daryl in Couderay. Hi, Daryl.
Good morning.
Daryl, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Good morning, Professor Freeman and Kathleen.
Morning, Daryl.
I think that what we need to do, find another way of doing things. It may be creating a new system. Agreeably, change. The majority of citizens will go along with this change. Sad to say, it seems to me that the root of this problem stems from an unconnected call that lasted 0.0 seconds, according to the FBI, in sworn testimony in a U.S. court of law. Actually, the 20th hijacker trial, Zacharias Massaoui, the shoe bomber. Now, this is according to a book I read by Dr. David Ray Griffin called 9/11 Contradictions, Questions for Congress and the Press.
Well, like, Daryl, what does this have to do with our conversation?
It's the root of the problem. If we weren't at war, we wouldn't be spending the money that we should be spending on our children.
All right. What about war spending? Are our priorities all messed up and we could find a way to get young people jobs if we weren't spending money on wars and perhaps other things? We'll ask that of Professor Freeman, who we've just been having problems with his phone. I'm sorry, all hour long. It's frustrating, but we're calling him back, so we will ask him about war spending in just a moment. Thank you, Daryl, very much for the call. We'll just go to another call. Gary in Iron River. Hi.
Yeah. Good morning. I guess I want to build on what Shana was saying earlier, and it strikes me that we have lots of jobs. You can't find a plumber. You can't find a carpenter. We're short on engineers, and we've got a generation of kids who have perhaps followed too much what they want to do, not what there is to do. We've got colleges and guidance counselors sending kids off to get four-year degrees in English and political science, and we only are ever going to have a certain amount of need for those people. So it seems to me we need to do a better job, and the high schools and the guidance counselor people need to do a better job of helping kids understand where the need is and what the possibility of getting jobs are in various areas, what the earning potential is, so they can make some rational decisions.
All right, Gary, these are good points, and I will bring them up with Professor Freeman as soon as we reconnect with him.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much for the call. We're just taking your calls, and I will relay your questions and messages to him as soon as we are able to connect. Bill in Blair. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, hi. I'm fairly pessimistic, you know, talking about the lost generation. I think the lost generation is sort of the first generation that is going to be, you know, there's going to be more to come. And the reason I believe that is that I think the USA has had great advantages over our world competition over the past 50-100 years. You know, after World War II, of course, most of the developed world could not produce, but we could because we weren't damaged. We are well educated. The Chinese are now well educated. But the world competition for natural resources, especially oil, has increased the price tremendously. Our country's been able to use that cheap oil to produce, you know, great products, and that has made us rich. I've seen a good part of the world, and let me tell you, we are rich. We are so rich that, you know, our people's perception of what life is like is you know, warped. Life is hard, and in most of the world. And I think it's going to be harder for us here. And it's only because we are now having to, you know, compete with the rest of the world, and the rest of the world is becoming educated. Resources are expensive. We no longer have that competitive advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wish it, the professor would please comment on that.
All right. Well, we don't know where he is right now, to tell you the truth. I don't know if the phone went bad or what, but we're desperately trying to reach him again. But I appreciate your comments on this. If you were to do, if you were entering college right now, Bill, what would you do? Oh, Bill is gone. All right, our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Here's an email that's come in from Carl in New Berlin. The elephant in the room is our corrupt two-party and lobbyist system. We need campaign finance reform and a third party. Small businesses will never be able to provide a high standard of living for the masses. We need to bring big business manufacturing back to the U.S. We need protectionist legislation now, along with a rising scale of taxes on the super rich. We just put that out there for you to contemplate. Lauren from Milwaukee. Hi, Lauren.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a recent college grad. I graduated with political science and psychology and minor in economics.
Mm.
And I wasn't quite sure what to do after college, so I decided to join Teach for America.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say enough positive things about the program. It's been, it's done so many great things, and it's so supportive to all of its members. But I'm placed in Milwaukee, and Teach for America analyzes how many people they can handle based on the situation in the district. And there are many of us that don't have positions, even though we were accepted into the organization. And we're initially it was gauged that there would be enough jobs for all of us. So, out of 50 of us, there are about 7 or 8 that don't have a job. And the same thing goes with Milwaukee Teaching Fellows, another similar organization. They had a large pool of applicants that they accepted, and there are many of them without jobs. So we're all told that we would be employed, and I've been waiting for about a month to get into the classroom.
Well, good for you. It's good to hear a positive story. Do you feel like you're in your field?
Sorry, say it again.
Do you feel like you're in your field when you thought about what you would like to do with political science, psychology, and economics? Where did you imagine yourself?
I wasn't quite sure. Like the previous caller said, I kind of pursued those areas because they were what interests me. I liked learning about them, but I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do with them. So I really do enjoy teaching, though. I love Teach for America. I might end up sticking with it. And also, I want to comment, Teach for America and Peace Corps have seen many more applicants in these recent years. Just because of the economy, a lot of people are trying to look for an out and something to do for a little while they get themselves on their feet.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sure many more applicants, but not the funding to fill the number of people who would like to do both of those professions. Thank you, Lauren, very much for the call. I believe that we have reconnected with Professor Freeman. Are you there?
Yes, I'm back.
Okay. Well, we talked to a few people while you were gone. Let me just, one of our callers, Gary, was talking about the fact that we need plumbers and carpenters and engineers, and what we've got is a generation of young people who are going for what they want to do instead of what's available to them.
Oh, I could disagree with that, because take an area where we do need people. It's petroleum engineering. This is a big expansion in energy areas. Petroleum and gas engineering. Salaries went zooming up, and there was a huge increase in the number of American people majoring in getting petroleum and gas engineering degrees. I think people really do respond to what is needed. And it's wonderful for people to do what they want. That's great. And usually you take a little bit of a pay cut and maybe less job security than if you go where the economy is directing you. But Americans have always and continue to be responding to the economic signals. If I announce guaranteed jobs rarely anybody who studies a particular field tomorrow and gets a degree in it. Every university in the country would see young people going to that area.
We have about 20 seconds left. What should we do right now to make things better?
Well, to make things better for the country, I think we need a huge change in our policies towards infrastructure building. We cannot compete with the rest of the world if we have old airports, old bridges, and old other stuff. And that's an investment in the country. It's not government sort of make-work stimulus short-term. One of the problems, I think, with the policies we had was they assumed the economy was going to bounce back and all we needed was government to give it a little kick. I think the country's now coming to realize that's not what we need. I mean, that could be helpful.
And on that point, we have to say goodbye. Professor Richard Freeman, a marvelous guest, and I'm sorry that our phone line was so absolutely atrocious. We've just had real audio problems this hour, so we'll have him back sometime because he is worth hearing, even if you have to work at it, right? Thanks for all of your calls, everybody, too. Thanks to Chrissy Pease and Rhonda Fanning. More coming up.